This podcast was recorded Thursday, May 25th at 10:22 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this.
Yeah, like GOP presidential candidate Ron DeSantis will actually say the words Donald Trump in his campaign speeches.
His speechwriters are tying themselves in knots, trying to avoid any reference to his one-time ally and the GOP frontrunner.
Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics. And all those Snollygosters or shrewd politicians who think announcing a presidential campaign on a media platform that few of his voters use is a good strategy. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Yeah, a Pew survey shows that only 17% of Republican or Republican-leaning voters use Twitter. And that's where Ron DeSantis made his presidential campaign announcement, after some technical delays.
You know, 81% of Americans are on YouTube.
That might have been a wiser choice.
Might have been. Anyway, our first topic is the controversial August election. You've heard a lot about it. It will ask Ohio voters if they want to make it harder to change the state's constitution.
The joint resolution approved by the legislature will ask voters if they want to increase the majority needed to pass an amendment from a simple majority, that is 50% plus one, to a 60% majority. It would also make it much harder to get on the ballot by requiring petitioners get signatures from every Ohio county, not just half of the state's counties as they have to do now.
And this week, the battles over Issue 1 are in the courts. First, opponents of the move say the legislature cannot use that joint resolution that they passed in order to order a special election in August because they say the legislature just last year outlawed such August elections.
The other court battle involves the language voters will see when they step into the voting booth. Opponents have gone to court arguing the ballot language is deceiving. It says the amendment would, quote, elevate the process of changing the Constitution, and the language does not clearly state that the threshold would move from a simple majority to that 60% majority.
You know, I guess we should start if whether or not this is actually going to make the ballot. It will come down to the Ohio Supreme Court. This court is strongly conservative. You would think that that may be the tiebreaker, if you will, that they would side with the conservative causes. But there seems to be a strong case here that, you know, according to legal experts, like the Dean Emeritus from the Cleveland State Law School, say that the legislature can't do this. They can't create an August election with a resolution.
Yeah, there's a ruling from the late 1800s that says specifically joint resolutions cannot supersede state law, which is exactly what this resolution would do. Others argue that because it is amending the Constitution, it's exempt from that because this is a special case and the legislature can at any time say, let's put this before voters and let them decide. So it comes down to, for the court, which as you said is strictly conservative, it comes down to their perhaps views on the abortion rights issue versus their strict constitutional views, you know, the sort of originalist of the Ohio Constitution, so to speak. How do they rule on this issue, this August election issue, and whether they can supersede state law, which it's so funny. They just passed.
They just eliminated August elections because they cost a lot of money and they have very low turnout.
And they argue that August elections are used by special interests because the turnout is so low.
You really can't make it up. So that's the first lawsuit, whether or not what the legislature did, the mechanism they used to put this on the ballot is legal. And then this gets us to the other lawsuit, which is over the wording of the ballot language, the explanation, the arguments for and against that. There's an argument here that this is that the words they used are deceptive and misleading.
Yeah, let's go through the wording on that voters will see. Now, when you walk into the voting booth or you get your absentee ballot at home, for example, the first thing you see is the proposed constitutional amendment. And the title is Elevating the Standards to Qualify for and to Pass Any Constitutional Amendment. And then it says the proposed amendment would, and there's three bullet points. One says require a 60% majority. It would also require that all the counties be included in the signature gathering. And it also says that 10-day grace period goes away. They say specify that additional signatures may not be added to the initiative petition after the collection period ends.
What often happens is they'll turn in the signatures, they'll be verified, and they'll go through that whole process, and they'll say, you were actually 5,000 short, and they'll give them another 10 days to come up with the additional 5,000 signatures.
Or to make sure to clarify that the signatures they have, you know, to clarify any, you know, you can't read the handwriting, or make sure they haven't moved. It's a cure period to sort of fix everything. But that would go away.
That would go away. And so that, you know, the word elevate, there's a lot of discussion about whether the word elevate is loaded.
Yeah.
And Frank LaRose insists it's not, but Frank LaRose supports this change, and he wrote the argument for issue one that voters will also see. And that also, again, elevating the standard is the language he uses.
And that the next thing voters see is the explanation for issue one, and that basically copy and paste the first page. It says the amendment, if approved, would elevate the standards by which the Constitution of the state of Ohio may be amended. Now, opponents to this say this explanation should include what the current law is. It never says in here that it's the current law is 50% plus one, and this would make it 60%. So they are arguing in court that at least this explanation should lay out what the current law is clearly for voters so they understand it.
A relatively minor detail in all of this. I mean, they argue it's important, but that's – you would not think that would it would be sink or swim on that part alone.
Well, it depends on how – in an ideal world, if politics were left out of it, if you're a voter walking in there, you're moving from this to this. If you approve this amendment, you are going from this to this. You're going from 50% plus one to 60%. So you could argue that should be in the objective explanation, the unbiased explanation of the amendment.
Yeah, but we have said when people walk into the booth, they know what they're going to be voting for.
In this one here. And then they do have the next two things you see are the arguments for and against, and those are plain. You know, the yes vote support. There's a yes vote protects the Constitution from deep-pocketed, out-of-state interests. It declares the Constitution is not for sale. It allows for amendments to have widespread support and to tell special interests that our Constitution is not up for grabs. That's the argument for issue one that voters
these are very much the partisan. You know, they get to make their case here. You mentioned the argument for, the argument against, also some very strong language. They say issue one ends majority rule. Issue one would shred our Constitution. It would permanently undo constitutional protections that have been in place for over 100 years. It also says issue one takes away our freedom. That's pretty strong. They say it would destroy citizen-driven ballot initiatives as we know them. And they say it applies to all issues. It would apply to every single amendment on any issue Ohioans will ever vote on. They say, you name it, just 40% of voters will decide.
And they use the special interest argument. They say this guarantees that only wealthy special interests could advance changes to our Constitution.
Which is true. It's going to be much harder. I mean, it's very hard to make the statewide ballot now.
Yeah.
If this gets passed, it's going to be extremely difficult.
But you're right. This is topic for discussion now. But this is not like an amendment that's going to be on a November election ballot. Just run that out. If you are voting in, say, November of 2024, and you're looking to vote for either Donald Trump or Joe Biden for president, that's why you're going to the polls first and foremost. And then you're looking at the ballot, and then you see this amendment. You may be totally unfamiliar with what's going on there. Then the ballot language is probably more important than this special election. This is issue one. There is no issue two. There are no other candidates on the ballot. If you are going to vote on August 8th or early voting in July, you know what you're voting for, I think.
Obviously. This is what is driving people to the polls. There's nothing else driving them to the polls.
So the ballot language makes for great fodder right now, but I really don't think it's going to sway this election one way or the other.
You know, the best part about this is that by elevating these standards to, as supporters say, keep special interests from out of state out of the Constitution, it's probably going to increase out of state interest in the Constitution, because now they're going to need to have so much money to make the ballot. They're going to need the hitmen from other states. They're going to need the people. You know, Dennis Willard is the guy in Ohio who specializes in this type of stuff. But there's people from out of state, and they're going to need to recruit all of them, and they're going to need to pay them a lot of money in order to make the ballot.
Yeah, because now you have to collect signatures from all 88 counties. That takes
a Herculean
lot of
effort.
People.
Right.
And there's not enough volunteers, regardless of the cause, to do that. So you're going to have, let's take the casinos. That's the example that the supporters of this move use is the casinos came in and they changed the Constitution. Well, the casinos had a ton of money. It also took them five or six times to do it, if you recall. But there, that's the kind of special interest that is going to have the resources to go to all 88 counties. But they argue that it should be hard to change the Constitution, should not be a simple majority. It's not like a regular state law, and that's why we should do this. Of course, this is all an attempt to thwart the November election on abortion.
Right, and redistricting and minimum wage going forward.
Yeah, first and foremost, it's November's possible vote on the abortion amendment.
Anyway, we'll be right back.
The Last Ride, a deep dive into a shocking unsolved mystery.
These two young men disappear off the face of the earth, and the last person to see them live was this sheriff's deputy. His stories were so unbelievable.
Listen to the Last Ride podcast, part of the NPR network.
Welcome back to Snelling Oster from WOSU Public Media. The culture wars continue in the Ohio State House. Some Republicans there have another bill trying to rein in transgender rights, this time on what bathrooms people can use.
Yeah, the bill from Representatives Adam Bird and Beth Lair would make K through 12 and public college students in Ohio use bathrooms and locker rooms that match the sex they were assigned at birth.
It is the latest effort by majority Republicans in the state House to try to limit trans rights. The House recently passed a bill to ban transgender girls and women from competing on high school and college sports teams. Another bill under consideration in the House would ban minors from receiving gender-affirming care.
This is the debate that's happening in many states all around the country. Many of these proposed bills are very similar, copy and pasted from ones proposed by conservative groups.
Yes, it is very much a culture war. We have debated whether or not to how much attention we should give it because we think it fuels itself by giving it more oxygen. But it is a news story. I mean, they are trying to limit people's rights. They're trying to keep minors from getting gender affirming care. They're trying to keep people from using the restroom of their gender identity. And it's going to continue because it polls well. It really fires up the base. And you know, when you ask Republicans. Who turn to, you know, to think tanks like ALEC. I don't know if ALEC's a think tank or not. They're more of a legislative service. But they don't deny that they use these legislative services. They take pride in it. They think it's efficient. It's like outsourcing.
Yeah, and both parties use the experts to help them draft legislation, which is not necessarily wrong, but, you know, it gets weird when it's copying. Every state is the same. You know, not every state in the union has the same characteristics, same demographics, same interests, same, you know, circumstances. It breeds cynicism when it's every bill is copied and pasted from a template. But my issue with this is that it's really there are, I think, 1% of the population identifies as transgender, maybe 1.5%. It's a small number. Rights are, it's an important group, and the rights of those folks should be examined and respected. But it is truly an issue that Republicans use to fire up their base, who believe that transgender rights should not be there. But let's take at sports, for example. There are six transgender athletes in the entire Ohio high school athletic, you know, sphere of all the sports that all the high schools play, boys and girls. There are six.
Right.
Identified trans athletes.
That's according to the OHSAA. And we don't know how many of them are transgender girls competing in girls' sports.
And yet we're going to pass legislation to protect women's sports. I mean, you can't even field a full offense or defense on the football team with six people.
It's a vastly overreported story. It's fascinating, and it's really a story of our time, and it's a story about civil rights. And so there's a lot of skin in the game from both sides, or certainly from transgender people trying to protect their rights. But it really is an overreported story. But
it's a catch-22.
Yeah, you know,
it's an overemphasized issue by the right because it really is a small percentage of the population. No percentage of the population should be targeted at all. Period. Of course, but it's generally a political issue that is emphasized. Overemphasized for political gain.
It's chum to the sharks.
Yes.
Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment. That is where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the week. And this week it goes to the man we mentioned at the beginning of the show, the newest presidential candidate, Republican Governor Ron DeSantis.
We all knew he was going to run. It was the worst kept secret in politics, but he couldn't make it official because in the state of Florida, it has long been illegal for the sitting governor to run for president.
Not anymore, Mike. Who would have thunk? On the same day that his glitch-ridden campaign announcement streamed on Twitter, the Republican DeSantis signed a wide-reaching elections bill that allows the sitting governor to run for president.
It was immediately challenged by the League of Women Voters of Florida, which calls some other parts of the bill voter suppression. But Ron DeSantis, for signing a bill to allow you to run for president the same day you announced your campaign, that's pretty shrewd, and you are our Snollygoster of the Week.
Ron couldn't even give it a day to breathe.
Yeah.
What? Anyway.
You know, I kind of agree. The governor should be allowed to run for president. That's a silly,
sure.
That's a silly law.
It's hilarious timing.
Yeah.
The day.
I mean, a governor is a perfect training ground to be president of the United States. And as a person of good government, I would want any governor to be allowed to run for president.
Anyway, that will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. As always, please be sure to leave us a good review on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you get your podcasts. And please just tell your friends about us. For our student producer, Katie Genius, and our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.